Imagine with me that you are walking down a street. It's a narrow street and there's some high-rise apartments on your left and on your right. It's double lane, but narrow. And then on the walls, as you're walking, you're seeing graffiti, spray paint murals. And this graffiti is all kinds of things, mostly political in its nature, and different slogans, right? Then people who are walking towards you, different kinds of people. People with tattoos all over the place, guys with shaved sides and kind of mohawk punk rock hair. There's also a granny who kind of rides past on a bicycle. As you're walking some more, there's bikes and scooters, and then you look to the right and a scooter has been converted into an art installation with like pot plants, etc. Then you look over to your left and it's very evident that there's a bunch of rubble. Maybe there was an apartment building that was there before, but it's been broken down and then turned into a vegetable garden. Strangest of things. Then you keep walking and there's all kinds of flags, very political in its nature, and the tone of the environment is kind of... things seem orderly, and yet there's also a sense of tension in the air. As you walk even further, you go around a corner, and it opens up into a public square where there's a coffee shop and some trees and a little bit of a park and some benches and these kinds of things. The place I'm talking about is a place called Exarchia in Athens. I was there a few years ago with a friend of mine, and he had started a community of faith in the midst of Exarchia. Now, to understand Exarchia, what you need to know is that Exarchia in Athens is kind of like the anarchist capital of Athens. So this is where all the anarchists go and kind of hang out and live together. And anything you know about anarchy, very simplified, there's a bunch of people who really do believe that the way we're running the world is simply not working. And so their response to that is just basically to burn everything down. So there's rioting and they kind of... they resist all kind of authority from police or government in any way. And within their community, there is actually a sense of law, but it really is enforced by violence. And so my friend was telling me that where we were having coffee when I met with him that day, about 20 meters away, there's a bench where he points at and he tells me that people often sit there and shoot up heroin. And then he tells me about another time when someone actually just got beat to death in front of him because the anarchist leaders found out that this person was selling drugs in the community. So they killed him. And so it's a very difficult space to begin establishing a community of faith, right? Anytime you've seen guys rioting at parliamentary buildings in Athens, Greece, it's anarchists or white supremacists or some kind of... combination of the two. And so tricky space to do Christianity, tricky space to do faith. And yet what a wonderful community of faith this friend has established. And he's seeing many people just come to know God and step into meaningful lives and really be rescued from destructive patterns. And it's a good thing to see. And so I asked him, I said, in this environment, what are the things that you have been learning about your faith, about Christianity? And this is what he said. He said two things. Number one, he said, whenever we're sharing Jesus with people, one of the hardest things to do is to hold forward Jesus instead of holding forward ourselves. And then he said this. He said, in his observation, every Christian actually needs two conversions. One conversion from the world into the Christian community, and then a second conversion out of the Christian community back into the world on mission. And that's the conversion that I want to speak about this morning. What happens after we jump off the cliff? And how do we increase our ability to respond to the person of God?
Who is Jesus? What is he doing? And what does it mean to follow him in the world today? My name is Matt Lewis. This is the Follower Podcast. And everyone is invited to the conversation.
Well, welcome back, everybody. It is the fourth episode of the Follower Podcast and the final episode in our series, Candles, Cassocks, and Conversions, a journey from religion to relationship and then to responsibility. I hope you've been finding it helpful. I've been getting great feedback from you guys as you've been listening and people saying that they're sharing these podcasts with people and that they're finding an ability to really help some of their friends who are searching and seeking. And then really the motivation behind all of this, that this is starting conversations, starting thoughts, and people are starting to talk about some new things around God and Jesus and faith and spirituality and meaning and life. And so all of that is wonderful. And thanks so much for that feedback. I'm really grateful that it's helping you in that way. So we've been on this journey from religion, how we get good and bad religion, and that really for religion to function in a healthy way, you want it to be a doorway that you step through. Then we move to this idea of relationship and how if you want to move into relationship with the transcendent, with God, you have to embrace the supernatural. There really is no way around that. And we use this metaphor of jumping off a cliff. And then in this podcast, by the way, I'm coming to you from Bahrain in the Middle East. And my brother's been competing in the Skydiving World Cup here, Indoor Skydiving World Cup. And so I've just been supporting him for the past few days. So good to be with you guys all the way from Bahrain. And so this episode, we want to talk about responsibility. And we use this metaphor of jumping off of a cliff and embracing the free fall of giving yourself to the unknown. But now we want to talk about, well, what happens after you jump? Then what? You know? And it is my observation that there are so many of us who are Christian people or believing people who've jumped off a cliff, and now we've entered into this kind of supernatural relationship with God. And now the question becomes, what next? You've seen the guys who there's this moment of euphoric coming to God, and then this kind of fire burns brightly for a while, and then it dies down, and people become complacent or apathetic in their faith, and they end up just filling seats and sitting in churches. And the question is, what happened? What happened after that first conversion? Where did we need to go from there? And that's what we want to talk about. How does our faith begin to evolve? Because I think actually the vast majority of us who would call ourselves believers or followers of Jesus find ourselves stuck somewhere between the first and second conversion. And so today we want to talk about the second conversion that moves us forward in our relationship with God. This is an ongoing conversion. This is an ongoing process. Some of Christian writing talks about this as like sanctification, but it does have some key markers and some critical questions, and those are some of the things I want to talk about this morning. So once you've jumped off a cliff, let's start there, right? You've moved through the doorway of religion, you came to the cliff of belief, you pushed into the transcendent, and then you surrendered to the fall, you jumped. Then what happens next? Well, miraculously in the Christian story, what we believe happens next is that as you choose to fall, someone actually catches you. This is a distinctive within Christian spirituality, by the way, because in many ideologies of faith, nobody catches you. You kind of have to catch yourself in so many ways. Many ideologies of faith kind of see it almost as like a scale of good and bad works, and you've got good works on one hand and bad works on the other hand, and if you want to have a relationship with the divine, you've got to outweigh the bad with the good. So this is why so many ideologies are kind of governed by laws and structures that help you be a better person, as if morality is ultimately the issue here. Again, I think that's an external treatment of an internal problem, and I don't know if it ever gets us to where we really want to get to. But not so with Christianity. With Christianity, there's this beautiful thing called grace, which is both divine pardon, but also divine power. It's an ability to help you move past your brokenness, but not only move past your brokenness to a blank slate, it's power to create in you a new person. And that new person looks a lot like the person who catches you, right? And the person who catches you, once you jump off the cliff, the guy who's catching you, as you've given yourself to the faith of free fall, the one who catches you, his name is Jesus. And really, he's the one that this whole thing revolves around, and he's the one that we're talking about as we talk about following. And one of the critical questions is, when we've been caught, what do we do there? Because there's an amazing opportunity that's lying in front of us now, right? If you think about it, you've been caught up into the story of God. And you don't want to just sit there passively. You want to ask yourself, well, how do you respond to this? How do you respond to having been caught up in the great story of God? And so that's really what I want to talk about, our response ability, right? How do we increase our ability to respond to the things of Jesus as we've made this decision to free fall into who he is? And I think there's many ways we could answer that question, but I'm just going to look at three key questions that we should always be asking ourselves in our faith, right? Number one, who is this Jesus? Number two, what is he doing? And then number three, what does it mean for us in the world today? And this leads us into almost like a second conversion, almost like a point where Jesus moves from being a peripheral person to central in our lives, where he moves from just being an idea on the shelf, an addition to us, to really being the fundamental reason we're alive in the world. And that, my friends, is actually what Christianity is all about. So let's start with the first question. Who is this Jesus? Now, this is a great question to ask ourselves. I think, as we've said before in the series, we have a propensity to kind of make the Jesus we desire rather than follow the Jesus that is. Tony Campolo talks about the idea of God made us in his image and then we returned the favor, right? So we treat Jesus like this totem pole. We look at him and we go, we like that Jesus is grace and forgiving and truth, but we don't like that Jesus is just and righteous, and we don't like that Jesus is Lord and King. We don't like those things. So the things we don't like, we take off, and then the things we do like, we keep on until we're basically worshiping our preference or ourselves in a mirror. And this is the most dangerous kind of idol, because we've labeled it Christ, okay? So it's sanctified in our consciousness, and we're not even aware that we're worshiping something that looks nothing like the Jesus who actually is. This is why so many people on a Sunday raise their hands to a Jesus that doesn't exist. And that's okay, because we all do that in part. But the question is, are you aware of it, and are you growing out of it? Are you growing out of your idolatrous Jesus toward the authentic Jesus? Or have you just become comfortable with the Jesus you've made for yourself? Because Jesus is someone. And unless we ask the question, who is he? It's very unlikely that we're going to be able to follow him effectively. And so who is he? Well, he's the king. He's the king of the whole universe, right? There is this idea of lordship, which is incredibly important for us to understand. He's not just your homeboy. He's not just your friend. He's not just, he is all those things. But there's an unhealthy familiarity that we can get into. There's a right familiarity, but there's an unhealthy familiarity where we just think that Jesus is there at our beck and call, able to fit into our schedule, able to fit into our calendar, where we can just make him whatever we want him to be. And we just think he's okay with our blatant disobedience. We just think he's okay with our kind of ignoring whatever it is that he's about. But that's not who he is, right? John, in the biblical scriptures, it tells us that right in the beginning, there was this word, and this word created everything, and nothing was made in the earth except through this word. And this word is, in fact, Jesus. So you go all the way back to Genesis. In the beginning, God said, this is pointing to this word, this pre-existent Christ, who through him, absolutely everything that was created was created. And then it goes on in Colossians to tell us that this Jesus, that everything is from him, through him, to him, and everything is being held together by him. Right? It's this beautiful thought that there's not one square inch of all creation over which Jesus doesn't cry out, mine. He's in charge. Philippians says that he was in very nature God, but then he set that stuff aside. And then having done that and become a servant to all people, the Father then has raised him up to the highest place and then put all things under his feet. So he's very much in charge. And one of the first things we need to think about when we think about who Jesus is we need to deconstruct our image of some kind of hippie by a fire. And we need to reconstruct the pre-existent, reigning, ruling Son of God who sits over all things. It's very important for us to see this. It's the picture in Revelation chapter 1, right, where John turns around, he hears the voice of Jesus, he turns around, and when he sees him, he sees Jesus in kind of full glory, right? And there's all kinds of crazy stuff going on. There's a sword, and there's stars in his hand, his face is shining like the sun, and his hair's white like snow, and his feet are like burnished bronze. But then John's response is to fall down like a dead man at Jesus' feet. It's the same reason why every time an angel appears to someone in the scriptures, one of the first things that comes out of their mouth is, fear not, right? This is overwhelmingly powerful, what we're talking about when we talk about Jesus. And so that's the first thing we need to get our heads around, is that when we talk about following Jesus, we're not just talking about anybody here. the humanistic philosophy that's tried to minimize Jesus to just one teacher among many, just like a wise rabbi dude, and people who've tried to negate his supremacy, tried to negate his supernatural nature. We lose so much of who he is if we do that. Number two, he doesn't make any provision for that because he's very clear about who he is in the scriptures that teach us about him, right? So Jesus is making these radical declarations. And if we're going to believe any of him, we really have to consider who he says he is, not who we think he should be. So when you've become this follower of Jesus, the first question you have to ask is, well, who is it that I'm actually following? And so when you look at your faith, you would do well just to consider, have you come to terms with that? Have you come to terms with the person that you claim to believe in is not taking orders from you? If your Jesus can fit into your schedule, into your calendar, into the box of your domesticated version of him, then my friend, it's likely you're just not following him. And we need to really think about that. The second key question we need to ask ourselves if we want to increase our ability to actually respond to this Jesus is to say, well, what is he doing in the world? Okay, because you didn't come to faith just to hang out in some kind of waiting room spirituality until you die and go to heaven one day. Now, Jesus is busy. And what is he busy doing? Well, he talks about this idea of, there's this one beautiful picture where he's cruising around and then he ends up hanging out with some Pharisees and dudes in a temple, and he gets up to read and they give him the scroll and he opens the scroll and it's got this passage from an old text called Isaiah. And in it, he starts to read that he's actually come to give liberty to the captives and give freedom to the oppressed and bring sight to the blind and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor, right? Then all through the scriptures, the prophets who are talking about this coming Jesus are talking about how he's passionate about justice and he wants mercy to flow like a river and how he's come to heal. And all through his life, he keeps declaring right in the beginning of all the gospels that talk about him, the first things that are coming out of his mouth are that people should repent and believe in the gospel, which is to say that the kingdom of God is at hand. And so in the mind of Jesus, it seems to be that he really does think that somehow there's a new kingdom that's in operation in the earth, and that in his coming, this kingdom is somehow established. There seems to be a new world that he's ushering in by his presence. Some writers would talk about the idea that the crucifixion of Jesus was actually his inauguration as king over the universe, right? And so what he's come to do is not to passively stand by as things fall apart. What he's come to do is to take over. He's come to be the light of the world. Okay, he's come to bring light to people who are in darkness, to bring healing to people who are in pain. He is the liberator of the oppressed. And so we look around at the world today and we see many, many, many oppressed people. We look at a broken world and we start asking ourselves, well, I wonder what Jesus intends to do about those people. And the answer is, he intends to free them. Not only does he intend to free them, but actually he's already planted the seeds of that freedom right in the midst of this reality. So Jesus is very intentionally on a mission. He didn't just come, die, go away, and now just wait around until some time when we all go to heaven. That's not the case. And very often when we think about Christianity as praying some kind of prayer, like a sinner's prayer, and then if you've heard about that, that's like this idea of like a moment of prayer, and then, well, now you're rescued, and now your job is just to hang on tight until some time when you die. What this does is it removes the power from our spirituality, and it makes us waiting room Christians. So we really do think that our job is just to try and be as good as possible in this place, because we prayed a prayer, we got our fire insurance, right? And so now it's okay, because one day when we go to heaven, one day when we die, we'll go to heaven because we prayed a right prayer. This is not the message of the Bible, right? Because Jesus is doing something. So once we recognize who he is, that he's king, that he's Lord, that he's powerful, then we recognize that he's actually doing something. We got to look around at the world and say, well, why isn't the world more like what this Jesus is doing? And that leads us to what this means for us. Because when you read the Christian scriptures, what you find is that Jesus' expectation is that the people who follow him would be those who execute his mission in the earth, right? Beautiful picture in Corinthians where it says that we've been reconciled to God through Jesus, and then we've been given the ministry of reconciliation. So our job is actually to be ambassadors of this new kingdom to the world. So If there's no justice, it's because we're not executing justice. If there's no peace, it's because we're not making peace. And we've been empowered by peace. When we jumped off that cliff, there's a supernatural reality of God's spirit that's in us that's enabling us to do it. But I think for most Christian people, we haven't had that second conversion that actually turns our eyes outward and our hearts outward, that makes us ask questions about how we can be of use in the earth for the glory of this Jesus, to make him look good and to bring healing to the people around us. Most of us have adopted some kind of selfish Jesus that's still all about us because we never asked the question in the first place, who is he? We weren't really interested in that. We weren't interested in getting caught up in his story. We were interested in him getting caught up in our story. We believed the lie that he wanted to come into our hearts instead of us coming into his heart, right? And so there wasn't this displacement of what's ultimately broken inside of us, which is selfishness. Because we're still in that selfish space. We're just using Jesus now for our selfish ends. But when we ask, well, who really is he? He's Lord. What is he really doing? He's establishing his kingdom on a mission. What does that mean for us? It means that we live in the same way now. This is why again and again and again, Jesus says, if you want to follow me, your response is to die to yourself, to take up your cross and then to follow me. There is always this invitation. You can think of Jesus' crucifixion as a metaphor for our own lives. There's an invitation that we would come to our own crucifixion so that we could then enter into our own resurrection. Okay, so what does it mean for you? What does it mean for me? It means that once we've gone through the first conversion of jumping off that cliff, giving ourselves to the mystery, entering into the supernatural, it leads us to a second ongoing conversion. And that second ongoing conversion is that we become less and less and less. And this Jesus we're following becomes more and more and more. And as he becomes more and more and more, he describes us as this idea that we become the light of the world. That's a huge statement. And I don't know about you, but many days I wake up, I don't feel like the light of the world. But the thing is, the more I give myself to this second conversion, this moving out of my little Christian huddle, this conversion out of being introspective in my Christian community and then into the world that so needs the message that I've come to find that has brought me so much freedom, the more I do that, the more I become the light that I'm following, right? I become a city on a hill that people can see. I become salt in the earth. I bring out flavors. I bring preservation. I bring healing. We start to restore stuff. We start to become the custodians of a new reality. It's a wonderful thing. And you might think, well, is this really possible? Well, you look back over history and you can see men and women who have done this, right? Who literally in their lives have created pockets of heaven everywhere they went. Mother Teresa. Whatever you think about her or don't think about her, it's interesting that in our culture, when we mess up, we go, oh, well, I'm no Mother Teresa. She's become kind of a benchmark of goodness in our earth. Was she perfect? No. Did she give herself to the mission of Jesus in the earth? Yes, she did. Right? Martin Luther King Jr. is another example. There's many examples throughout history of people who have understood the second conversion, who didn't hold Jesus all to themselves, who didn't think that he was about just their own personal gratification, but who understood that in order to call him king, they had to be about his kingdom. And they started to live their lives in that way. This, my friends, is what it means to really follow Jesus. And the idea is that we would move from simple belief, because really belief is not enough. Belief is just an idea. But if you really want to know what you believe, look at how you live. And so that we would start to move from belief into action, that we would start to move into this ongoing second conversion that moves us out of ourselves and into him. And then, yes, one day we will move from this earth into a new heaven and a new earth that Jesus is creating. And what a wonderful thing. But in the meantime, our job is not to just kind of passively sit by and wait. Our job is to increasingly become and create that kingdom here in the midst of this place. So I want to invite you to that second conversion. And really, these are kind of the tenets of what this podcast is going to ongoingly be about. So if this stuff is helpful for you, man, stick with us. We're going to keep talking. This is the final episode of the Candles, Cassocks, and Conversions, from religion to relationship to your ability to respond, your responsibility. And in these three questions, who is Jesus? What is he doing? And what does that mean for us? As we keep asking those questions, we find that we actually increase our ability to respond to this Jesus. So I hope this has been helpful for you. As always, if you feel that this is helpful, please follow, you know, search, subscribe, share. Follow the podcast and share it with everyone on every platform so that as many people can be a part of the conversation as possible. And then if you feel like supporting, remember, the Follow podcast is supported by you. So you'll find information to be able to do that on the website, mattlewis.co.za. I really do hope that for each one of us, we will continue on a journey of moving toward this greater, deeper second conversion. If you're a skeptic, if you are not a follower of Jesus, and you've never really found a reason to follow him, maybe part of it is because you've been hanging around many Christian people who've never entered into the second conversion. Maybe you looked at many of the Christian communities around you, and they just resembled so much of the world that you were struggling with. Can I suggest that there is another way? There is something more authentic with greater and deeper integrity. But it does come at a cost. There is a denial of self, and it is a tricky journey. But if you're looking for something of meaning, something to live for, indeed something to die for, this Jesus is the one that you're looking for.